Hey, this is Mike from GoCellPhoneRepair.com, and today is February 13, 2017. This is the phone cast for techs and phone repair business owners. So if you are one of the above, thank you for coming back to listen again. And if this is your first time listening, and even if you're not in the business, I do thank you for tuning in. This podcast was something that I started just kind of as an experiment, honestly, and to kind of get my thoughts out into audio format. And for whatever reasons, I have started to see growth. People are listening and downloading, so that's awesome. So I will continue to do this as long as people are interested. So as I mentioned earlier, it is February 13th. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day. Did you get something special for your special person? Because if you didn't, here's a reminder. Make sure you cross that one off. Got to get that done. And if there's not a special person in your life, I will give you a tip that is totally unrelated to phone repair. Go out and meet someone today or tomorrow, because all of the single people in the world who don't want to be alone, you'll find them out hoping to accidentally run into someone by chance. So there you go. See, I don't just fix phones. I also give free dating advice. So I'm working around a few issues today. I've got some noise outside the house. I'm hoping it doesn't affect what I'm doing here. If it does, then you won't be listening to this, because I'll have to re-edit and do this whole thing over again. So that is why this is getting uploaded a little later than usual. Now, I'm thinking about taking this to a live stream so that it can be more interactive. There are some reasons that I've thought about putting this on my YouTube channel, which is Go Cell Phone Repair. And there are reasons, a few reservations that I have about that. The main one is, at this time, I am prohibited by my upload speed. So as you know, getting a good download speed from your ISP is not that big of a deal, but getting good upload speed is, one, costly, and number two, not widely available depending on where you live. And I'm not sure that I have that option yet. But if I do, I'm interested to hear back from those of you out there who listen. Is this something that you would want to and be able to participate in? Because I think it would be kind of cool if we could do this live and have some interaction. And if you had questions, or maybe you remind me to mention something that I forgot in the process of putting this together, that would be really cool. So I'm interested to hear back from you. Remember, you can always hit me up on Twitter at @fixmycellphone. Look up my YouTube channel or find me on Facebook. Just search for Go Cell Phone Repair, or you can email directly mike@gocellphonerepair.com. All right, let's get to it. So first of all, I do want to mention that the Verizon screen repair plan that I mentioned last Friday is in fact happening, and oh my gosh, the sky is falling, as it often is in this business. So what happens a lot of times, if you're new to the industry, is that the moment people see competition in phone repair, they automatically assume that it's time to panic, because we have to worry that Store X is going to put us out of business. And once again, I want to assure you that this is not going to make or break your business. Now, obviously, if we have third parties or carriers coming in and offering the same services that we do, that can impact our business. But what's really going on behind this, and what should you know about it? Well, number one, what Verizon is attempting to do is to increase the sales of their protection plan. So the reason that they're pushing this in-store repair same day, or as soon as same day, which obviously doesn't mean anything, because as much as soon as good mileage as, what does that mean? It means under the best conditions, you might have this happen. So who cares? But more importantly, what is happening? Well, number one, they are pushing a protection plan, which means that you don't get your screen repair for free. Obviously, there is a deductible. There's a monthly fee. If I remember correctly, it was $11 a month, $79 per claim. You can do this 3 times a year, but it is limited to certain phone models. So basically everything from the iPhone 5C, 5S, SE, all the way up to the 6S and 6S Plus. That excludes the iPhone 7. So number one, the most late model phone on the market that a lot of people are going to have will not qualify for the same day repair. Number one, the moment that Samsung launches the Galaxy S8, I have a feeling that that will also be one of the phones that you will not be able to get repaired same day by Verizon. And if so, will the cost be the same? Well, time will tell, obviously. Secondly, This is going to be limited in availability and locations, so it depends on whether they even have the screen in stock if you're looking at getting a repair performed the same day. And also, last time I checked, I think they said they had about 220 locations, something like that. So there are some areas where this is available, some where it's not. And where I'm located, which is a highly populated area of the East Bay near San Francisco, there's nothing close by. It's probably a good 45-minute drive to get to a facility that would offer this. So once you start doing the math on this and think about what a customer has to do, the actual cost when they pay for the membership, the deductible, and so forth, you start to see, and keep in mind, these are not professionals who have been fixing phones for the last 5 or 10 years. These are people who probably got a crash course in phone repair. So if you're a customer, you're going to be entrusting them with your valuable information on that device that if it becomes damaged, I am sure that they will compensate you for the equipment, but you will never recover the information if they break your phone. So by all means, no matter where you go to get your phone repaired, be sure to back it up. Now, again, for my friends in the industry, we have and we will continue to see this happening. There are going to be people entering the market and there's going to be this panic mode of, oh my gosh, now customers are not going to come to me. They're going to go somewhere else. And I'm going to venture. I'm going to say that my prediction is that this will not put a lot of people out of business. And if it does, it's going to put people who have not diversified, people who don't have great customer service, and people who only offer a very limited amount of service to in their phone repair business. So if all you're fixing are 5 different models or, you know, half a dozen or a dozen models that are on the market and you're not able to do anything else, then yes, someone saying that now Apple is giving this great deal to, let's say, iPhone 6S customers, or they have some sort of recall or class action that says that they have to take care of a problem. Yes, that can impact you if you don't have other services that you can offer. So by all means, we want to make sure that we're not just learning one thing and that's all we do. And this is where, you know, I kind of feel bad for people who have gone into strictly iPhone repair, because if that's all you got, yes, it is the majority of the market share for handsets in the US, but at the same time, if that's all you do, and everyone else is doing the same thing, then you should be a little concerned. But I don't think you have to be that concerned about Verizon for a number of reasons. And if you've been doing this for a period of time, one of the challenges that we see within this industry is the scalability of the phone repair business is limited for a number of reasons. Probably the main one being that getting good help is going to cost you money. You can't, you know, finding someone at minimum wage who does a great job every time is going to be rare in my experience. And when you consider also that if someone does a great job on repairs and they really start to learn the business and they understand how to interact with customers and they can set up purchase orders and they can receive inventory that comes in and they can do your bookkeeping and stuff like that. At a certain point, that employee doesn't need you anymore. And again, like I said, this is a big challenge for scalability because you want your employees to be empowered and to understand how the business works and you should be able to walk away from it. This is the catch 22. You know, you don't want to be at your business 24/7. But if you give someone the keys and teach them everything they need to know about running the business, why do they need you anymore? So there's got to be a relationship there, an employee-employer relationship, and sufficient compensation and motivation for that employee to keep coming into work and being able to practically run your business by themselves. And on the other hand, you have people who will work for a very small amount of compensation. But obviously, that is going to create a lot of problems. And that brings to mind something that I read recently. And that was, if you remember, probably about a year, year and a half back, Walmart started to offer phone repair inside of their stores. Some of their stores, that is. And this is the thing that struck me funny from the beginning, because if you think about it, Walmart targets a certain customer demographic. So when people go to Walmart, they are looking to find the lowest possible price that they can pay. Now, if you have a business that operates on labor-generated revenue, because for the most part, not too many people making a lot of money on parts. There's just not a lot of margin in that. Although, you know, you might be adjusting your invoices to offset the labor and make it look like you're making money on the part. But you know what, it comes down to it, if someone ends up returning something, then that creates its own set of problems. So for the most part, what we're in the business of doing is labor. And when you're doing labor to generate profit and you're dealing with the customer who wants to pay as little as possible, and this is another thing I kind of want to get into, is the whole negotiation process. But when someone goes to Walmart, they are looking to purchase something that is basically a commodity, you know, for the most part. If they're buying a stereo or groceries or clothing or whatever it is that they find in that store and they can find somewhere else, the reason, or one of the reasons that they went to Walmart, is because they can buy it for less money. Obviously, there's the convenience of finding everything in one place, but if you go to Walmart, you will notice that a certain percentage of the customers that go to the store are intent on spending as little money as possible. So that puts the person who has opened up a store for phone repair inside of Walmart's property into a corner where they're going to be dealing with people who don't want to spend a lot of money, but at the same time, they've got to pay this, to lease this space out from Walmart. So as you can imagine, the overhead compared to the potential earnings, it will in most cases create some problems. And what we're starting to see is a number of stores inside of Walmart who are going out. They are no longer going to be doing phone repair in some of these locations. And I see this as something that we'll probably be hearing a lot more about, because it is going to be so challenging, number one, to generate a profit inside of Walmart when you're dealing with a demographic that is trying to save as much money as possible. And number two, you're also working inside of a store that sells phone accessories. So a lot of the profits that you can potentially add on to your repair services are going to go out the window, because Walmart, again, is going to be the big store that buys in huge quantity and is able to survive with a considerably lower markup than a privately owned business. And if that wasn't enough to think about, here's another thing for consideration when it comes to Verizon doing phone repairs and when it comes to Walmart doing phone repairs. And if you've been in this business for 6 months to a year, everyone out there already knows the answer to this question. Wait until Verizon starts trying to replace the screens on the Galaxy S7 Edge. Need I say more? Okay, this phone is plagued with problems, even from the manufacturer. We've got this pink and blue line that appears on the right-hand side of the screen, and then we've got purple smudges that are showing up. Can you imagine someone in a Verizon store who just started fixing phones and probably took, you know, maybe a three-day course or something in how to do screen replacement? I don't even know what their training program is like. And they are going to replace the screen on a Galaxy S7 Edge. And a certain percentage of those screens are going to be defective in a short period of time, or they're not going to know the proper procedure to get them installed without causing that problem. And then there's going to be a big mess. And that is going to reflect directly not only on that Verizon as a store, but on Verizon as a company. Because when you have an experience with a particular brand, you tend to look at the entire brand and not just one location as that's, you know, the standard of quality for that particular brand. So, you know, if you have a bad experience at, and I'm just picking these out of the air here, if you have a bad experience at Office Depot, well, then you're going to assume that Office Depot is probably not a place you want to go to. And if you have a bad experience at, I don't know, McDonald's, you may not go back to McDonald's, but that is not always going to be a true reflection of every store. Obviously, there should be some consistency, but you just never know. But what I'm getting at is that I don't think that Verizon probably fully understands what they're getting into. This is probably more of a test program. And again, the idea is to sell their protection plan. And probably the only really good news, I think, from their perspective is that once you lock in that monthly subscription, if they're fortunate enough, and they should be, otherwise this program won't fly, they're going to have enough people paying that monthly premium and not making a claim that it's going to offset whatever losses that they have outside of the repairs, you know. But in addition to that, defects in the displays that they install, problems with customers where they have to credit them back and so forth. So we'll have to see how this unfolds. But again, my main message here is that no, the sky is not falling. When it is, we'll all know. We'll have a definite indication that it's time not to repair phones anymore. But I got to say, after, 23 3 years. Yeah, see, so I started in 94. So yeah, it's been a long time and it hasn't stopped yet. So who knows? Anything could happen. Here's the bad news. Here's some bad news, though. It looks like, and I mentioned the Galaxy S7 Edge because pretty much everyone out there has run into this at least once and seen how difficult it can be to get these things consistently to go out the door and not come back. And in some cases, there are repair shops that don't even service the Galaxy S7 Edge when it comes to screen replacement. There are some who have chosen to only use the pre-installed screens on the frame, which I think is probably the best option at this point, although there are some availability issues there. But if you can get the S7 Edge with the screen installed on the midframe, you should not have as many problems when it comes to returning the defective screens back to your supplier. But Samsung, it looks like, this is the rumor, when the S8 is released, it looks like every variant of that phone is going to have a curved screen. And you can imagine, as we saw with the older curved screens, there are going to be a certain number of them that have defects right off the production line. There are going to be a certain number that come into the store and get sold and customers take them home. And within the warranty period, they start to experience this problem. But worst of all for us is that we are going to have customers come in with a broken screen. We're going to replace them. And then our replacement screens are going to develop problems in who knows what time period. I mean, it is inevitable when you build a screen like that that's curved. What we're seeing is that there are going to be a certain number that don't hold up over time. So I'm not even sure how we're going to handle that, but that is almost definitely going to be happening. Now, there's something, I'm going to change the subject here a little bit because I was looking at a newsletter. I want to say this was from Beijing Phone Repair, something like that. But if you remember, a few years ago, you could hardly give away a Sprint iPhone. And the problem with them, of course, was that before LTE, Sprint iPhones could be used on the Sprint network. And that was just about it. When, you know, back when it was CDMA, you could flash them, you could get them onto Metro. I want to say they could be used overseas. Ultimately, they could probably be flashed and put onto a CDMA carrier here. But if you try to dealing with Verizon, they don't enter, to my knowledge, CDMA phone IMEIs or MEIDs into their database. It's not something that they do. So for the most part, if you had a Sprint iPhone, it was an iPhone, but it was an iPhone only for Sprint. And if you were dealing with someone who wanted an iPhone and they didn't happen to have Sprint, it's not going to do them any good because basically you've got a big iPod. So what it looks like happened, and by the way, one of the other difficulties with Sprint phones has always been checking to see if the IMEI was good or not. Because for the longest time, you'll go to a lot of the IMEI databases online that check for whether people have not paid their bills, they've been reported stolen, or they've defaulted on their contract or whatever it is. And with most GSM carriers and even Verizon at a certain point, you could go in and look and make sure that the phone was free and clear. And outside of the iCloud, you wouldn't have to. Oh, and don't let me forget to, I'm going to make a note of that because I do want to discuss the iCloud situation, by the way. So the problem, of course, was that Sprint, for whatever reason, has never really cooperated with those databases. So if I had a Sprint phone and I wanted to find out if the IMEI was good, I would go onto the website and they would say, we can't tell you if the Sprint IMEI is any good, or the MEID, whatever it may be. And I would have to get on the phone, call up Sprint, listen to their sales pitch, tell them all I want to know is whether or not this phone can be activated. Then they would tell me how great their plans are and when I was going to sign up. And I would say, no, I just want to find out if I can, you know, I'm looking at buying this phone. Can you tell me if I can activate it? And I'd listen. It would literally be a minute and a half, 2 minutes of them talking. You can add that to the amount of time that I had to spend on hold. And then they would finally say, oh, well, it doesn't look like that phone's installed on a Sprint account. And it doesn't look like anyone owes any money on it. So yes, you should be able to activate this phone with Sprint. And then you would turn around and take something like a Boost phone, which obviously runs on the Sprint network, but apparently there's some disconnect between those two databases. And you take this Boost phone that Sprint told you was free and clear on the line, you go to activate it at Sprint in the store, and they say, sorry, we can't activate this because it's being used on a Boost account. And why couldn't you tell me that on the phone? I don't know, but it would drive you nuts. So for the most part, what this did was to drive down the value of Sprint phones in general, and that included iPhones, which was really exceptional, because for the most part, when you have an iPhone, you have an iPhone, it has a certain value attached to it. But there was always that, unless it's a Sprint iPhone. Well, it may be that this is going to change, and in fact, it may be changing right now. So it looks like the advantage these days with a Sprint phone is the fact that Sprint doesn't want to share their information with anyone. And I have to admit, I love this, because what's happening is Sprint not cooperating with the IMEI database and telling people when their phones are, you know, when their serial numbers are good, when they're bad, when they can and cannot be used. Because of that information not being shared, if you take a Sprint phone, which used to be very difficult to unlock, but now can absolutely be unlocked, even if it's not usable on the Sprint network, you will be able to use it on another network. And since, assuming it's LTE, of course. So if you have a newer Sprint phone with a SIM card, I want to say this started on the 5S. I should do a quick Google and check. But if you've got a late model like an iPhone 6, 6S, iPhone 7 from Sprint, and you pay to have it unlocked, once it is unlocked, you can put it on any compatible network. So that would be any LTE network. You can take your AT&T, your T-Mobile card. You should even be able to put your Verizon SIM card in it at that point, since now we don't have to worry about actually adding the MEID into their system. So the irony here is that Sprint's either in being incapable or unwilling to cooperate with this database, which we should have across the board. It should be very simple to take a look at a phone and find out if it's lost or stolen or not, right? I mean, if you go to buy a car and you want to register it at the DMV, you can find out whether this car is lost, you know, whether it's stolen, right? You can't register a stolen car. You can go in and say, hey, I want to buy this car. Here's the VIN number. Is it clear? And they say, yes, no, it belongs to this person, you know, whatever it may be. So why don't we do the same thing with phones? I can't think of any reason. There must be something that I'm missing. But in any case, this is backfired, in my opinion, because what we're going to see for Sprint, this is backfired. What we're going to see is a whole bunch of people going out and signing up for a promotional price or financing or whatever it is that they have now available at Sprint, taking the phone and cashing out at some point and saying, you know what, I need the money. I don't care about my credit history. I don't care if they disconnect me because I don't make payments or whatever. They go and sell the handset to someone else. That person can unlock the phone and put it on another network within the US. So really, Sprint is losing. The customer who originally owned the phone obviously will have something negative on their credit history, but there are a certain percentage of people on a continuous basis who really don't care about their credit history or can't save it and have nothing to lose and say, you know what, I'll just take the cash. So I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more of this. And in fact, Sprint, the value of a Sprint iPhone may get to the point where it's equal to or greater than the value of a comparable model on a different network. So that's, again, very interesting and just irony. And I have to say, I'm kind of laughing right now at Sprint because they really should have done something a long time ago to just cooperate. You know, why would you not want your customer to be able to buy a phone that's not lost or stolen or defaulted on a payment plan and then unable to be used on your network? On top of that, they have always made it difficult for people to provide their own equipment. If you took a CDMA or, you know, something that could work on Sprint's network, the catch is that you have to enter that serial number into their database in order for their network to function, in order for the phone to function on their network. Why? You know, if you're going to sign up, I'm going to pay you 60, 75, I don't know, I don't even know what their rates are, 50, 60 bucks a month, probably minimum. Why wouldn't you want me to provide my own equipment? You don't have to worry about me defaulting on payment. You don't have any costs, any taxes associated with that. I mean, it's all profit for the most part. You pay your employee a commission for signing me up. I'm on your network, I'm using it, and you're making money. I don't understand why they make it so difficult. Now, last week, I uploaded a video because, as you may already know, Apple has taken their iCloud status verification off of their website. So if you weren't already aware of this in the past, we could go onto the Apple website and we could punch in an IMEI or a serial number from an Apple device and find out if the Find My iPhone is activated on that device. And then if it is, you don't want to buy that until the person who's selling the phone takes it off of their account. So there's no more Find My iPhone and it's not attached to their iCloud. Well, for the rumor, and Apple, to my knowledge, has not released an official statement on this, but the rumor was that they did not want people to be able to create IMEIs to put into iPhones and then go onto the website and somehow find out if it was a valid IMEI or to steal someone else's IMEI or whatever it was. Okay, so I understand that if that's the case. However, there was a workaround. All you had to do at the time, and this has changed, but at the time you could go onto their website and go through the motions of doing a mail-in repair. So you would go in, say, I have a phone that needs repair. I want to mail it in. The screen's damaged. And then it would bring you to a page where you punch in your IMEI and or serial number, and they would tell you whether or not the Find My iPhone was on. And if it was, they would say, sorry, you can't do the repair until you turn the Find My iPhone off. So that was a workaround. Well, as of today, at least, that option is no longer on Apple's website. However, for the time being, there is another workaround. And I have a feeling there always will be some way to figure this out. And again, one of those things that I don't understand, why would you not want customers to be able to buy legitimate merchandise? Well, maybe because you're not involved in the sale. That would kind of make sense, right? So if you're Apple and you want people to buy your phones, why would you help to facilitate them buying and selling them amongst themselves? I think that is the bigger, more important reason behind why they took this off of their website. But in any case, there is a workaround. It is iPhoneOX.com, iPhoneOX, as in x-ray.com. You can punch in your IMEI and they will check at no charge, at least as of today, and find out whether or not there is a Find My iPhone on that device. I hope that this stays up and running. I have updated my video and I will continue to update the links on my video if that one goes away and something else comes up. So just so you know, there it is. So I mentioned price negotiation a little earlier, and I want to revisit that briefly. I am going to do an entire episode on this at some point, but for the time being, something that came to mind when I started talking about price negotiation, and that was when I first re-entered this industry. So I got trained a long time ago and I did phone repair off and on for a long time. And I came back to this at about 2009, I think it was, and got up to date on the newer equipment because phones obviously had changed. I'd been away for a couple of years, came back, started learning the new handsets, got back into the groove. I was doing my thing, but still kind of was operating with the mentality that I had a couple of years previous. And I would have a customer come into the phone where we do, you know, what we felt and we were told by many customers was practically magic. You know, we would take phones that had been in a swimming pool for an hour, phones that had been gone through the washing machine and the dryer, phones that had been run over by cars, and we would get them to the point where they were working or at least working enough so that the customers could recover their data. And they loved that. And we, you know, obviously your ego starts to inflate when people tell you how amazing you are and how awesome a technician you've become and so forth. So I'm not going to say that went to my head, but I felt very confident about what I was doing. I felt that I worked very hard to earn my money. People were appreciative of that. And that was awesome. I mean, I couldn't think of a better job than one that allows you to help people feel good and show you their gratitude. You know, having people bring you beverages and women who would bake you cookies, you know, grandmas would bake you cookies or someone would buy you some chocolate or whatever it was, you know, Starbucks, bottles of liquor, just all sorts of stuff because they were like, hey, I'm so glad you did this. How can I, you know, can I tip you? And, you know, I'll usually kind of say, no, I'm not, that's not my thing, but they'd insist on buying lunch. Anyways, you got the picture, right? So felt really good about what we were doing and felt very competent and very confident about the skills that we used. And then someone would walk in and ask how much a repair cost. We would quote them a price and then they would ask for a lower price. And this at the time was very new to me because for a certain period, I'd say probably the first 10, 15 years that I was involved in phone repair, you didn't really get people asking for different prices. You know, it was kind of like when you went to the store and you bought, I don't know, a gallon of gas or a carton of milk or a television, you know, whatever it was that you purchased, that was the price. There was a price on it and that's what people paid and that's how we did business and everything was easy. You're in and out. Everybody got the same deal. But over the years, and being in a newer environment, I noticed that there was, you know, to be honest, the very first time this happened, I was appalled. Someone asked me if I could work for less than what I was saying the price was on this repair. I was literally insulted. Like I was at a loss for words. And sorry, I'm kind of trying to talk around sounds that are coming in the house. I've had to pause here a couple times, but I just couldn't believe it. I was like, you got to be kidding me. But of course, you know, I didn't say that. I didn't want to react. I didn't want to make the customer upset. But if they walked away, it was fine with me because they weren't going to go down the street and find someone to do it cheaper. Obviously, that has changed now. So there's a little more involved in that. But I have to say that one of the biggest things that changed was my perception of the way that people do business. And a lot of this had to do with the fact that being in a very multiculturally diverse atmosphere. I think that's the right term for it. So I'm in the Bay Area near San Francisco, and we have people from all over the world who do business here. And unbeknownst to me, in many parts of the world, it is expected that a price on a service or a product will be negotiated, plain and simple. So I did not, this was some education that I got. In certain cultures, when you go to make a purchase, you do not pay the asking price ever. So these marketplaces are set up with an asking price, and then the customer says, well, I'll give you this much. And then the guy who's selling the product says, well, I can do it for this. And then they end up meeting in the middle, a bit like a flea market would be if you've ever been to one before, or if you've gone into areas across the border, like into Mexico, where they have shops and they're selling leather and silver, and pretty much all of the prices are negotiable. So for some reason, I had this thing in my mind that, well, when you're here, this is the way it is. You buy it for this price. Well, again, fortunately, I never really said anything crazy to the customer, like get out of the store. But I started to realize that there were a certain number of people that would come in and want to go through this negotiating process. Now, this put me in a difficult position, obviously, because my prices are structured in order to earn the amount of profit that is required to run a business. So there is no room in there really to lower the price, because if so, that means that somebody's not getting paid as much. You know, it would be the same as if someone walked in and said, I'll tell you what, you want $75 for this product, or you want $75 for the service, I'm willing to pay you $65. Well, why don't you just walk in and say, can you take $10 out of your pocket and give it to me? Because that, in effect, is what I'm doing, unless I have already inflated my price enough that I can negotiate down to what I am willing to sell for. So I'm not opposed, and I'm not criticizing anyone. You know, you do business whatever way it is that you do business. My goal was to do business as efficiently as possible. And if I spend an extra 5 minutes with each customer negotiating a price, now I am not doing business as efficiently as I could. And as a result, I need to earn a larger profit margin on each sale that I make. So in effect, what's happening is someone has to pay for that chat time. If you've got 10 customers that come in within, I'm just picking a round number here. You have 10 customers that come in and want to negotiate price, and you've got to spend an extra 5 minutes with each customer. Now you've spent 50 minutes worth of your time. So whatever it is that you have to earn to operate your business for an hour that day, you have to make up for within that same day by charging extra money on something. And probably the only fair way to do it, well, the fairest way would be to only charge the people who are negotiating with, right, to charge them more. But what's going to happen is you end up charging every customer a very small percentage more than what they should be paying because of this extra time that you had to spend dealing with a person that wanted to haggle with you on the price of his repair. Okay, so what's the solution to this? How do we get people who come into the store and immediately want to negotiate to get in and out of the store as fast as possible? Because ultimately, I don't mean that literally, like they don't need to get out of the store, but we need to get to the point where we can conduct business without all this jibber jabber, so to speak. So here's a thing that I noticed consistently, and hopefully what would I've taken away from this that will help you for what it's worth. Number one, there are a certain number of people who want to feel like they are getting a deal. Okay, this is the way that they're used to dealing in business. And when they walk in, they don't want to hear what the price is for the public. They want to be your special friend, and they're going to send you all sorts of referrals and yada, yada. Okay, yeah, obviously, lots of talk, very little action. So if someone tells me if I do something at a discount for them this time, they're going to send me five people. I say, you know what? Why don't you send me the five people first, and then I'll give you the deal. You know, because that's kind of how the way, that's kind of the way that it works in business. Lots of empty promises. So show me the money and let's do it. But on top of that, I don't want this person to walk away. I want to do business with this person, but I want to get down to business as soon as possible. So with that in mind, it's very difficult, and you cannot judge a book by its cover by any means. But you may see consistencies among certain groups of people, and I'm not going to name any certain group of people, but I think that if you're in business, you'll come to understand that here's a better way to look at it. The second time a customer comes to your store, and you know that this is going to be the person who wants to negotiate. And this is exactly what I did. You know, the first time, everyone's equal when they walk through the door until we start talking. Then you can kind of make an assessment of where you're at, right? But the second time they walk into the store, you react based on the first time that you did business with them. So the second time, and here's a very specific example. I had a customer who came in, and he would all immediately, we're talking, and one of the first things out of his mouth was, "What's my price?" I don't know what that means. What is your price? Your price is what I just gave you your price. What are you talking about? But what he was getting at, obviously, was, how are you going to give me a deal? I said, okay, now I know you. If I see you again, I will expect this type of interaction next time. So I said, look, here's what I can do. And, you know, he kind of wanted to do the negotiating business. And I noticed two things. Number one, humorous responses work well. If you don't want to insult someone, but at the same time, you can't really give them whatever concession it is that they are looking for, try throwing some humor into the mix. I mean, it kind of lightens things up, and they get, you're building rapport, you're demonstrating some character, and at the same time, you're lightening the mood. So when he started to negotiate with me the first time, I kind of in the back of my mind, I said, oh, okay, so we're going through this process. So my first response was, oh man, you want me to do it for $50? What, you want to put me out of business? And he immediately understood what I was saying. And his reaction right at that moment was, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to put you out of business. So he understood where I was coming from right away. I said, okay, listen, man, here's what I can do. This and this percentage off this accessory, or whatever it is that you have in your back pocket that you can use, something that you're not going to lose out a lot on. But when it comes down to labor, I'm pretty fixed on what I charge. I can't give huge discounts, you know, maybe a military discount or something like that. But the problem with discounts is that, you know, ultimately somebody pays for it. So across the board, we're doing the same thing. Do you want to punish one group of customers because they don't share something that the other, you know, this one other customer has? I don't know. That's up to you, obviously. But one thing that I've noticed that helps a lot is getting rapport with the guy as soon as possible. Humor accomplishes that rapidly, and we don't have enough, a lot of time to spend doing this. So I said, look, I structure my prices so that everyone gets the best possible deal. Come in again for another repair, and we'll talk about it at that point. And at the same time, the second time he comes to my place of business, I already know what he's going to say. So I am prepared. And in fact, that was another, I'll give you another line that I used for humor. So another customer comes in under the same circumstances, says, well, is there a discount? And this one, this always kind of blew my mind. I wanted to ask, for what? I say, here's the price, it's $75. And they say, well, is there a discount? Well, if there was a discount, I would have told you, right? But no, there's no discount. There's new coupons. But here's the deal. If you want to negotiate, then I've got to start at a much higher price. I can't give you the lowest possible price I have, and then you ask me for a discount. I've got to start up higher so I can make it sound like you're getting a better deal. And this person immediately got what I was saying. They kind of laughed, and then they backed up and said again, well, is there a discount? I said, no, you know, really, I've got my prices as low as they possibly can be. So this is what I can do. And in most cases, this will kind of disarm this customer who's got this idea that they're going in on a mission or a battle, and, you know, there's going to be this arguing back and forth, because I really don't have time to do that. Now, obviously, if you're new to the business and you're not established well, and you're doing everything you can to get customers in your door, and you're doing everything you can to close the deal, there may be some exceptions to this rule. You might say, I am willing to work for a lower profit margin in order to build my business. But keep in mind, whoever it is that you know, a business is like a building. You start with a foundation, and you build on top of that foundation. And that foundation, until it is destroyed or floated down off by flood waters. I can hardly talk today. Is going to be there. So those first few customers that come in, and I've seen this happen. I've seen it happen over and over. People start up a business. They give this incredible deal to a customer the first time they come in early on in the business. And that customer keeps coming back asking for the same price indefinitely. On top of that, they tell their friends what a great deal they're going to get. And here's how much I paid for my screen. And that alone is bad enough without adding in the fact that many customers will come up with their own numbers. You can go in and look at their invoice and see that you charged them $99 last time, and they'll say, oh, it was only $69 last time I came in. And whether they're doing that intentionally or if selective memory has just kind of pulled up a figure from some other transaction that they had, as long as it works out in their favor, that seems to be the default that they go to. So keep that in mind if this is the way that you want to start out. I want to leave you with one of the last things that, as far as negotiating, helped me out. And I have to give credit to one of my students. So I do phone repair training. I forgot to mention that. So next week, February 20th through the 23rd, we do phone repair training. That is at MD Wireless in Antioch. If you want to get more information, do go to gomdwireless.com. And we do this every month. So if you want to get real hands-on experience with a variety of handsets, real-time feedback from people who have been fixing phones for a long time, visit our page, or again, shoot me an email, mike@gocellphonerepair.com. You can also reach me, mike@gomdwireless.com. Okay, so enough of that. So last thing that I wanted to leave you with, and this is something that I learned from one of my students. And I always tell people, you know, when they ask me, I have had people say things that were flattering, but at the same time, kind of a lot of pressure, you know, when someone introduces you as their expert or master technician or something like that, it's flattering, but at the same time, it gives you something to live up to. And I don't go around bragging about how good I am at doing things, because in this business, you are always a student. If you ever think that you've learned everything there is to know about phones, then wait until next month when a new phone gets released, and then you'll find out that you still have a lot to learn. So I never want to say that I know everything. This is definitely a continuous learning process, but I learned something really cool from a student of mine who was, I want to say, probably one of the younger students I've ever had in my class. I think he was about 23, 24 or so. And he was managing a couple of accessory stores in a mall that wanted to add phone repair onto the services that they offered. And we started talking about this negotiating thing. And he happened to have lived in a culture on the other side of the world, basically, where this price negotiation was always going to happen in any situation. He said, no matter what you buy or sell, you're going to negotiate price. And when he moved to the United States and started working in a mall and realized that you have to get customers taken care of, get them checked out, and move on to the next customer because there are constantly people coming through the store, he said, Mike, I felt the same way that you did. I needed to cut this interaction down to the minimum amount of time required, close the deal, or move on. And that's all there was to it. And I have three magic words that are going to make your life much easier in the future. I said, you got to tell me, man, because I use humor, I do all this kind of stuff. And he said, well, listen, if you feel like at any point you have invested as much time as you can afford to invest with that customer, and you've got something else that you could be doing that could be earning a profit, and you want to not be rude, but at the same time, end this negotiating conversation. If the customer won't budge and agree to your terms and you can't find middle ground, or you just don't have time to deal with it, these are the three magic words. That's the price. And that's it. That's the end of the conversation. Either the customer says, okay, or they say, I've got to go. Or if they continue trying to negotiate, you say, listen, I got to get back to work, and physically walk away, because sometimes you have to do that. And I don't encourage anyone to do this on a regular basis, but if it comes down to it, if you've got money waiting to be made and someone who wants to waste your time trying to get you to sell something for less than other people are happy to pay, then you are in fact wasting your time, and you are creating a customer base that is going to want to do business like this every single time. So no other choice, nothing else to do, nothing else that's going to earn your money. Invest as much time as you feel comfortable with. But if you feel like you're at the end of your patience and it's time to get back to work, that's the price. So Khalid, if you're listening, thanks again. You have helped me save so much time over the years with those three simple words. That's the price. And that's it. Usually, the first person who speaks next is going to make a concession of some sort. So if you've been in sales in any capacity, if you've ever bought a car at a dealership, you'll often find a point in the conversation where someone makes a statement and stops talking. And the next time the silence is broken, it is usually going to be by the party who is agreeing to the terms that could not be agreed upon. So usually the winner, if you want to call it that. And I really hate to lose that term. There should be two winners in every transaction. There shouldn't be a winner and a loser. But if someone's arguing with you and there's going to be a winner of that argument, it's going to be the person who lays down the conditions and remains silent until the other party agrees to those conditions or terms. All right, that is it for the PhoneCast for today, February 13, 2017. I will be back on Friday, every Friday. I just kind of talk about things that are more interesting to the general public. It's not specifically focused on phone repair. It does include phone repair and just phone stuff in general. I call it the week in wireless, and I will be doing that Friday this week. So I invite you to come back and listen to that. Again, for anyone who's in the phone repair industry, I know your schedules are busy, so you don't have time to be all, I mean, you're on the internet doing research all the time anyway. So if you want to play something in the background on your way to work, on the way home, at the gym, I'm putting that into audio format, and I am very appreciative of the people who have subscribed and keep coming back to listen. I will continue to create content here as long as it is useful to you. All right, that's it. I'm Mike at GoCellPhoneRepair.com. If you need to contact me, have an awesome week as usual, and thank you so much for listening.